Let's go in our Bibles then to the book of Judges, Judges chapter 13. You know the story of Samson. We'll try to work through that together today and still get us out here on time. So rather than saying how to break a mother's heart, this is probably a better title, okay? Honor your mother, it's more than just a day. So as I was working on this, I didn't realize there's a nationaldaycalendar.com. It's a pretty simple to remember. National Day of whatever, this is it. So last month, in the month of April, on April 2nd, was National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day. Did you get that one? Okay, Kyle, down at Bob Jones, did you remember that one? Okay, National Peanut Butter. In case you don't like the cold, a little bit later in the month, April 12th, is National Grilled Cheese Sandwich Day. So there you have it. You might have missed those last month. On the 16th is one that all the guys like, 4-4, 4x4, National Day of Jeeping. It's like Jeep off-roading, 4x4 day. So that was on April 4th. And then on April 23rd, the birthday of the Bard. So it's National Talk Like Shakespeare Day. I hesitate to put that one up, but it's there if you want it. This month, yesterday, was National Apple Pie Day. Did you remember that one? Kyle said, why would they do that when apples aren't ripe till October? Okay. Yeah, mushy apples. But that was yesterday. Today, you're going to like this one, is National Dance Like a Chicken Day. Besides being Mother Day, today is National Dance Like a Chicken Day. Tomorrow is National Chocolate Chip Day. And just in case you thought you'd missed it, on Tuesday is National Piercing Day. So you have not yet missed it. Just wanted you to be aware of some of these other special days that are on our calendar. We laugh, but not all of these national days are necessarily a waste of time. Earlier this month, we did have the National Day of Prayer. We've opened up our facilities at different times for that. It's a good day to get in front of us all of setting aside a time to pray. Later this month, obviously, we'll have our Memorial Day, the last Monday in May, a time where we set aside and we focus on our veterans who've lost their lives in giving, in paying the ultimate price so that we might enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy today. Today, obviously, we celebrate Mother's Day. But the biblical injunction is that we honor our moms, and then it doesn't say on which day. It doesn't say honor your moms on Mother's Day. It doesn't say honor your moms on the second day in May. The biblical injunction is just to honor your mother. So what does that look like? As we come to this text in particular, I think that we'll see that honoring our mother is something that's more than just remembering a certain day, and it's more than just saying the right words. The life of Samson is where we're going to look at this morning. And Samson is a hero who breaks a mother's heart. I think that in the life of Samson, we see that unlike anyone else, mom's little hero can end up breaking mom's heart. So you might have been to the down to Sight and Sound, seen the production that they've done of Samson. They do a very, very good job with that. But the life of Samson is what we're going to look at this morning. We're just going to go work through his story. It's basically told in four chapters, so we can think of it in four scenes, if you will. The first one we're going to call potential. He has a promising future. In chapter 13, we see that Samson shows up and he becomes a tangible blessing from God. Chapter 13, the book of Judges. The people of Israel, again, did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord gave them into the hand of the Philistines for 40 years. Now there was a certain man of Zorah of the tribe of Danites whose name was Manoah. His wife was barren and had no children. The angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, again, she's unnamed. He appeared to the woman and said to her, behold, you are barren, and you've not borne children, but you shall conceive and bear a son. This announcement comes at a time of national evil and divine discipline. If you were to take the time to work through the book of Judges, we would see that time and time again, there's a cycle that works through the book of Judges. They come into the land, book of Joshua, they've divided up the land, and now it's a part of finishing out the conquering. And yet it says that there arose another generation that knew not the Lord, and they let the people stay in the land. And we're starting to see what starts to happen. Well, the scenario is they fall into sin. And in their sin, God subjects them to servitude. Well, sometimes it's the Moabites, sometimes it's the Philistines. Depends on where they're at the time, but God allows them to fall into servitude. They cry out to God, they supplicate, and then God sends salvation. And everything's okay until they fall back into sin, and God puts them into servitude. Then they cry out in supplication, and God sends salvation, and time and again and again and again. This is the 12th judge in the book of Judges. It's the 12th time this cycle of sin, servitude have fallen out in the lives of God's people. He's announced by a divine messenger. Verse 3, the angel of the Lord appeared. This is going to be a special messenger, not just any old angel. It's the angel of the Lord. Verse 6, the wife goes down and tells her husband, a man of God came to me. His appearance was like the appearance of the angel of God. Very awesome. Hard to put into words what this man looked like. She doesn't give us any more description than the fact that his presence left me filled with awe. Verse 18, Manoah had prayed and asked that God would send this man back again. He didn't get to see him. He didn't get to hear the message. He does, and he shows up to the lady again. Lady goes, gets the husband. Manoah comes, and he asks him, what's your name? And the statement of the angel of the Lord in verse 18 is, why do you ask my name, seeing that it is wonderful? My name is Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Prince of Peace, Everlasting Father. This is none other than the Son of God, the pre-incarnate Son of God, showing up to announce the birth of Samson. In fact, we see that as they make the offering, in verse 19, that Manoah takes the goat, the grain offering, offers it to the Lord on the rock to the Lord, to the one who works wonders. Manoah and his wife are watching, and when the flame goes up toward heaven from the altar, the angel of the Lord goes up in the flame and ascends to heaven in the flame. And then all of a sudden, verse 21, then Manoah knew it was like the angel of the Lord. And he said, we shall surely die, for we have seen not an angel, but we have seen what? We've seen God. Boom. This is extraordinary. He's been the lady. And again, this is an unnamed mother in the Old Testament. But she's a mom. She's a gal at this point who has thus far been unable to have children. He says it twice, as though he's dense, which he's not because he's the Son of God, or as though he's rubbing it in. But I think he's entering into the pain. He says, you're barren, and you haven't born children. It's like the same thing all over again. You're barren because you haven't had children. But this is the point. This is her life. She is defined as one who has no heir. They're parents of obscurity at this point. They're Danites, which isn't like a huge tribe. It's just kind of tucked up above Judah, which is a huge tribe. It's in the middle of the land. It's surrounded by a couple other smaller tribes, not a huge possession. They're nobody special. They're right kind of on the outskirts of the territory of Dan, right next to the Philistine border. So they're just not anything very special. She's barren. That means that there is nobody now in their household to inherit their land when they're gone. And not only is there nobody to inherit their land, there's nobody to continue their name. That means they're wiped out. Their lineage, their memory, their honor, gone. This defines her. And the Son of God, the pre-incarnate Son of God, comes down and he says, listen, I understand that you can have no children. You're barren. Let me tell you something. All of that is about to change. And with those words, she who was barren now looks forward to becoming a mother. A mother. Deborah, earlier in the book, in chapter 5, chapter 6, she rejoices and says, I am a mother of Israel. To be a mother wasn't to be just, oh yeah, you're like a housewife. Everybody else has their career women. They're up and coming. They're moving. No, to be honored in Israel was to be a mother in Israel. In fact, to be honored in all of Israel was to be a mother of Israel. And so not only are there patriarchs, but there are matriarchs. And when Ruth has the little baby by Boaz, he said, may she be as the mothers of Israel to you, Boaz, as you marry her. To be a mother was to find your place of honor, of respect in this nation of the covenant community. So by having this announcement, this little one becomes a tangible blessing of God. For so long, those arms had been empty. Night after night after night after night, as they longed to hold a child, they would be empty no more. Remember, this is at a time of discipline, of evil, and God comes with a blessing. He will live his life devoted to God. These parents are special parents. We see in verse 8 and 9, Manoah prays to God, and God listens to him. In verses 12 and 17, they're very expectant. Manoah says, now listen, when your words come to pass, when they're actually fulfilled, he's banking on God following through with his word. They're going to be careful about being obedient by not eating certain things and avoiding certain substances. They're submissive. They don't help the angel to eat. They offer the sacrifice that he recommends. In verses 19 and 20, they worship. Verse 21, they're alert. They understand who this is. His wife is wise. She says, listen, honey, if God wanted to kill us, he wouldn't give us this information. Waiting 9 months for a baby to be born. He's not going to kill us. And then in verse 24, they're witnesses. They name him Samson. Samson is the name, little sun, little glory, little brightness. In the midst of all this darkness, there's a little bit of brightness that's shining in. They live right next to the town called Beth Shemesh, which is the name, the house of the sun. And as they get ready for this little child to be born, and he's actually born, they name him Samson. This is one who is going to shine forth the glory of God in the midst of our darkness. And so they ask down in chapter 1, verse 12. Manoah says to this angel of the Lord, now when your words come true, he asks two questions. What is the child's manner of life and what is his mission? His manner of life is that he will live a life devoted to God. He's going to be a Nazarite. That is, he's going to have no fruit of the vine, no razor on his hair, and he can touch nothing unclean, especially the dead. We find all of these regulations in Numbers chapter 6, and they're listed out. There are three categories. No fruit of the vine, no razor to the head, and touch nothing unclean. Only one of those is visible. No razor on the head. It becomes an outward manifestation that your life is devoted to God. The other things, they're inward, they're private. Nobody sees, nobody knows, and that becomes a part of the story. But as long as Samson maintains this outer veneer of this outer identity of one who belongs to God, God uses him in a very special way. His manner is that he will be devoted to God. Now, here's the thing. The Nazarite vow back in Numbers chapter 6 is a voluntary thing. You take this vow voluntarily. You don't do it by imposition. With Samson, that's not the case. He is going to be dedicated to the Lord from the womb until, verse 6, the day of his death. No, verse 6 to verse 7. From the womb all the way to the day of his death. Samson belongs to God. Now listen, you're a mom. You've just been told you're going to be a mom. That's exciting. Yeah, you find out. First one. Woo-hoo. And then this angel tells you, guess what? Your child will be devoted to God all the days of his life. What does your heart do at that point as a mom? Yes. Really? Like, oh no. What's that going to look like? But yes. It's so exciting as he starts to process through this. And then he says he will be significantly used by God. So what's this boy's manner? For his entire life, he belongs to me. What's his mission? Look up at verse 5. No razor shall come upon his head. The child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to what? To save Israel from the Philistines. This is a big deal. God is going to use your son to do his work. Wow, that's pretty special. This isn't just any kid who's going to grow up and raise potatoes on the family farm. Not that there's anything wrong with raising potatoes on the family farm. But that's not his mission in life. It's not to build a bigger house. It's not to tend the garden. It's not to feed the cattle. His mission, his life, is to save Israel from God's enemies. To save God's people from God's enemies. This is profound. This is awesome. And remember, when it's all said and done, this is God himself who's announcing this birth. One of two people in the Old Testament. The other is Isaac, where the Son of God shows up and says, this time next year, you'll have a son. This is pretty amazing. Then he says at the end of the chapter that he is uniquely blessed by God. You come down to the end of the chapter, we see verse 24. The woman bore a son, called his name Samson, and the young man grew, and God blessed him. Well, what does that mean? We don't know. But it was obvious that God was blessing him. The Spirit of the Lord, verse 25, began to stir him. In this region between Zorah and Eshtaol, started to agitate his heart, started to get him ready for the mission that was to be his in life. Internally, God's at work in this one. How would you like to get that message, Mom? That's pretty awesome, isn't it? Listen, I'm going to give you a tangible blessing that you can touch and hold and change its pants, but this blessing is yours, okay? He'll live a life that's devoted to God. He has a mission from God to be a blessing to God's people. And I personally will hand my hand of blessing upon him and give my spirit to him to do the work that I've called him to do. That's a pretty exciting message. That's Luke 1 type of message. John the Baptist, isn't it? It's like, this boy will be holy. This boy will accomplish my purpose in life from womb to grave. And as a mom, you're going, yes, really? Me? Chapter 14 is a problem. There's a troubling turn in the story, and we're familiar with it. First, we'll call the wandering eyes, wandering feet, wandering heart. Verse 1 of chapter 14. Samson went down to Timnah. Well, what's he going down to Timnah for? It's not really that far away from where he lives there in Zorah, but it's far enough. It's enemy territory. Well, as they're going down, he's going to later bring mom and dad. We see in verse 5, Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah, And they came to what at Timnah? What is it? Vineyards. Okay, wait a minute. What does that mean? If there's vineyards, there's wine. There's fruit of the vine. What is a Nazarite not supposed to touch? Wine. Okay. All of a sudden, we've got this motif showing up. He's wandering into enemy territory. He's going there, where he probably has no business going, unless he's going to conquer it and take it back. And when he gets there, verse 1, he went down at Timnah. He saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. Well, guess what? When you're there, what do you see? You see what's there. And he opens up his eyes. He sees one of the daughters of the Philistines. That's not profound in and of itself. When you're in Timnah, you see the people of Timnah. But he's not looking at the guys. He's looking like any young man would at the girls. And he sees her, but he doesn't just see her. In seeing her, he makes a judgment upon her. He tells his mom and dad, get her for me because she is right in my eyes. Look at verse 3. Get her for me. She is right in my eyes. Verse 7, he went down and talked with the woman, and she was right in Samson's eyes. This is a phrase that expresses a personal discernment and a personal judgment. He sees her, and he's making a decision. You know what? I like what I see. The basis of his judgment is the fact that he likes what he sees. That it goes no further than that. He gives no second thought to what God had said about it. We're not going to take the time, but back in chapter 7 of the book of Deuteronomy, God said, do not take for your sons daughters of these nations. Do not do it. They're going to turn your sons' hearts away from me. Don't take their sons to be husbands of your daughters, because they will turn your daughters' hearts away from me. You cannot look at them and want them. They are unwantable. Samson says, can't tell that to this heart. Well, I like what I see, and I want what I see. The phrase there in both verse 3 and verse 7 is, she was right in his eyes. That phrase is used 4 times in the book of Judges, 2 times with regard to Samson, and 2 times just after this, once in chapter 17 and once in the very last verse of the entire book. And every man did what? What was right in his own eyes. Samson's the beginning of the end of the book of Judges. It's God's man. God's man that God's going to use from cradle to grave. And he's buying into this trap of every man doing what's right, not according to God's word, but what's right in his own eyes. Wandering feet, wandering eyes, wandering heart. As he gets there, he begins to view people as things to be used, simply to get the things that he wants. Father and mother, go get her for me. Verse 2, verse 3. His dad says, what, isn't there a woman among all our people, among all our kindred? He says it again, go get her for me. He's dismissive. He demands of his parents, he doesn't ask, he doesn't work through it. And when they give their recommendation, dad, would you shut up already? I told you what I want, I've already made up my mind, this is what I want, now go do it for me. And then he's deceptive. Verse 6, as they're going down to Timnah, as they're going down to meet this girl and her family, he kills a lion, a young lion, a strong lion. But he didn't tell his father or his mother what he had done. Later on, they're making a second trip. They've met the in-laws. They know where this is going. They've arranged a second trip. They go, and Samson goes out of the way to see this dead lion that he had killed before. And there's honey in its carcass. There's bees all around. He goes down and he grabs some honey from the carcass and he gives it to his parents. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the carcass of the dead beast. Wait a minute. It's a dead lion. They're going down to the vineyards of Timnah. What is a Nazirite not supposed to take? Wine. And he's not supposed to touch anything that's dead. Wow. Okay, but he's not telling anybody about it. He's still got his golden locks. He's still got his long hair. So at least on the outside, he looks like the good little sunshine boy that he was named to be. But he's using mom and dad to get the things that he wants. Later on in verse 12, there's a party. He throws this party for, it's a bachelor party. All the guys come, they show up, there's 30 guests. And rather than just enjoying their time together, he said, you know what? I could use these guests to get something that I want. I'm going to give them a riddle. And he says, you know what? If I win, then you give me 30 changes of clothes. If you win, I give you 30 changes of clothes. But again, he's always working the angles. What's in it for me? How can I use these people to get what I want? Well, it ends up that they don't like the fact that after 7 days, they still can't guess what his riddle is. And so they talk to his wife, and they start to press her pretty hard. They say, listen, if you don't find out, we're going to kill you, and we're going to kill your family. You've got to find out from your husband-to-be what's the answer to his riddle. So she does. She starts crying. She starts mocking him and just saying, listen, you don't love me. You're mocking me. Why don't you tell me? Listen, I didn't even tell mom and dad. Oh, you don't love me. You can't take it anymore. Finally, he tells her. And then she tells them. And then Samson gets a little bit mad about it. And he says, if you hadn't plowed with my heifer, you wouldn't have known the answer to my riddle. Wait a minute. All of a sudden, in that little phrase, he gives just a little bit of a snippet of how he views this woman who's about to become his bride. What's he call her? Okay, being called a heifer in any generation, whether it's Old Testament or New Testament, that's not flattering to a woman. Guys, young men, take this to heart, okay? Do not call your girlfriend, do not call your bride a heifer. That will not go over very well. Here's the thing. You own a heifer. You use a heifer. You put a heifer to work. And he says, guess what? You use my heifer to do the work for you. She's my heifer. Hands off my heifer. Wow, okay. But in the larger picture, you understand what's happening here? Samson sees something he wants. He wants her not because of who she is, but because of what she is and what he can get from her. He's starting to view people as things to get what he wants, things to be used to get what he wants. He loses the riddle, and so he has to find 30 changes of clothes. What does he do? He goes down to the seacoast, down to Ashkelon, and guess what? I need 30 of these, so I guess I'm going to get them from 30 people. Well, guess who doesn't need clothes? Dead people. I need their clothes. Tough luck for you. Boom. 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 Samson's beginning a very, very, very dangerous life, especially as a representative of God. He's starting to use people to get what he wants. He uses his guests. He uses his wife. He uses his parents. Now, ironically, as he uses others, they're also using him. His guests are using him to benefit rather than give him the exchange of clothes. His wife is using him. You hate me. She weeps. She presses him hard so she can get what she wants, and she tells the answer to the people. And then there's another problem as he turns a corner. He takes his holiness and he views it as a matter of privacy. Holiness as a matter of little consequence. It's really not that big a deal. And in the course of the chapter, we've already talked about the fact that he's been defiled by death in killing the lion. So he's killed the lion. He's eaten stuff from it. Down in Ashkelon, how many men did he kill? 30. Okay. Not only did he touch 30 dead men, he killed them. He's the one who's responsible for making them dead. How did he get the clothes off of them? Can't touch that now. Sorry, I could when you were alive, but that's now we got that part of it done. Give me what I want. He disrobes them when they're dead. He's touching dead all over. He's defiled by drink. We come to verse 17. We see that this party that Samson sets up. Verse 10, he set up a feast, for so the young men used to do. And it's a seven-day feast, verse 17. But the word for feast is built on the word to drink. This is a drinking feast. This is a bachelor party. This is filled with all the folly of sin that goes with that same thing today. That's what this was about. We're not reading between the lines to say, you know what, maybe he did, but the text doesn't say it. No, it says it. That's the whole point. That's the whole purpose. He's defiled by death. He's defiled by drink. Now, wait a minute. He will live a life devoted to God. He's God's man. Nobody asked him, but from womb till grave, he's God's man. What does that mean to Samson? Not very much. It really doesn't mean anything. It's kind of like Esau back in a previous book, who for a pot of porridge sold his what? Sold his birthright. The book of Hebrews says, don't be unholy like Esau was unholy. And he took that which is holy and he counted it as worth nothing. You know what Samson counts his manner and his mission? He says, who cares? It's worthless. This holiness, it's a private matter. There's really no consequence if I'm holy or if I'm unholy. But as always, the consequences of private unholiness profoundly affect the others in this story. His father and his mother are brought into the whole thing, going down to Timnah with him. His wife is given to his best man. The men of Ashkelon are struck down. A matter of little consequence, 30 people have died. And in the next chapter, his bride and his in-laws will be dead as well. Here's the thing. Holiness and unholiness are never matters of little consequence. And they are never matters that are private, that affect only you. They always affect others. That's just chapter 2. Chapter 3. There's a pattern now. Chapter 15. He's starting to move forward. We pick up right where this story has left off. Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man, and Samson goes home. He's mad. He's red hot. In hot anger, he goes back to his father's house, it says. But now, there's a determining focus over the course of next 20 years of his life. Verse 1, chapter 15, after some days at the time of wheat harvest, Samson goes down to visit his wife. He brings a young goat. After some days, we're not told how long, but we're told it's at the time of wheat harvest. Apparently, this is a new development. The wheat wasn't ready to harvest when he left. The wheat is now ready to harvest. That means he's been gone for a while. No word to his wife. No check-in. He doesn't even know that she's not his at this point. So he goes down. He says, you know what? I'm going to go get what's mine. And he's talking sexually. I'm going to go get what's mine. That's my heifer. I'm going to plow with my heifer. No, there's no, hey, let my wife know I'm here. There's no, hey, I'd like to get together with you. I really miss you. It's all about Samson. I'm going to get what's mine. Then there's another attitude that starts to surface. I have a right to get back when I'm wronged. He finds out, no, Samson, you can't have her. I thought you didn't like her. That's why you went away. So I gave her to your friend. She's not yours. Actually, look at her little sister. She's so much prettier. Don't you want her? Samson says, no, you don't deal with me this way. You're double-crossing me. And so he says, you know what? This time I will be innocent when I do them harm. And so losing his bride, he goes out and he finds 300 foxes. How in the world does this guy catch 300 foxes? I have no idea. We're not even told. But he takes their tails. You ever try picturing this guy doing this? You ever try take the tail of a cat and try tying them together? Try taking foxes and tying their tails together. Then he ties a torch in the middle of it, lights them on fire, and sends them out into this fresh wheat harvest. Needless to say, the Philistines aren't impressed. They don't like this very well, that everything is going up in smoke. But he says, you know what? I'm going to do them what they did to me. I'm going to be innocent when I do them harm. And then they come and they kill, verse 6, then the Philistines said, who did this? Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he's taken his wife and given him to his companion. So the Philistines come and they burn up her and they burn up her father with fire. Well, that kind of fires Samson up. Verse 7, Samson said to them, so if this is what you do, I'm telling you, I swear I'll be avenged on you, and then I'll quit. And he struck him hip and thigh with a great blow, and he goes and stays in a cleft of the rock. But the idea is, as they have done to me, verse 11, so I have done to them, he explains. Why did you do this? I did this so I could be avenged. I did this because I have a right to get back when I'm wronged. So right here, do you see? I have a right to get back when I'm wronged and I'm doing God's work. When they wrong the people of God. When they wrong who? Wrong me. You know what? I'm going to go get what's mine. And if anybody double crosses me, I'm going to deal with them because they've done me dirty. Who's at the center of Samson's life? Samson is. This is going to continue. We see that, we do see, that he figures that he has a right to sing his own praises. So he goes down, he's staying in a town in the desert, not in a town, he's staying in a cave in the desert, basically, near a town, and the Philistines, 3,000 of them, come to this town and say, where's Samson? We know he's here somewhere. So the men of Judah go out to the desert, they find Samson, and say, Samson, you're coming with us. He says, now wait a minute, are you going to do anything to me? Nope. We're going to turn you over to the Philistines. And here's the thing. Samson is beginning to fight against God's enemies. Who's fighting with Samson? Nobody. They're turning over their greatest asset to the enemy, and they're siding with the enemy. That's how low things have gotten in this story at the point. Actually, as the story's gone, there's that cycle, sin, suffering or servitude, supplication. This is the only story in the book of Judges where they fall into sin, they fall into servitude, and they don't do anything about it. They just decide to live there. They're getting used to a new normal. But anyway, they turn over Samson to the enemy, and when he gets there, it says, like the sun was shining, his bonds just begin to melt. And out comes his hands, and he sees a jawbone. What's a jawbone come from? It's from a donkey, but what kind of a donkey? It's a dead donkey. It's a dead donkey. He's not picking up a living donkey's jawbone, right? You get it? Okay. So again, now he's going to do God's work by defiling himself again with what God said, don't get yourself dirty. But it's never been about God for Samson. It's always been about Samson for Samson. This is the downfall of Samson's life. Samson's life is about Samson. The amazing thing when it's all said and done is that God gets glory through this selfish individual. When it's all said and done, he picks up this jawbone and he kills 1,000 men with it. And then he throws it away and he sings this little ditty. See if I can find it. Verse 16. Chapter 15, verse 16. Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, have I struck down 1,000 men. Who struck him down? Well, yeah, Samson did. How could he do that? God helped him to do it. But he sings this little ditty. Woo-hoo! Great am I, sing my praise. Doo-dee-doo-dee-doo, I'm the best in the land. With a jawbone. In the end, look at what happens. Verse 17, as soon as he finished, he threw away the jawbone out of his hand, and that place was called Ramoth Lahai. Okay, great, thanks so much. The hill of the jawbone, or the exalting of, not Samson, the exalting of the jawbone. You know what, when it's all said and done, Samson doesn't claim to have a great God. He says that he's so great, and he did it with the jawbone of a donkey. Here's the exaltation of the jackass, if you will, in a very real way. And he's rejoicing in this at a time when he should be praising God for sparing his life in front of 3,000 of the enemy. But Samson's life is about Samson. He sings his own praise. And then he gets done with this great and awesome thing. Verse 18, he gets thirsty. So thirsty, he thinks he's going to die. And he starts to lash out. He calls out to God, but it's really lashing out to God. He says, so God, you've granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant. Okay, I acknowledge, because I need something from you, that I better acknowledge that this was actually from you. So you've done this by my hand. Now, you're going to like let me die? Don't you see what I just did for you? I just killed 1,000 of these people, and you're going to like let me die out here in the wilderness. I'm your servant, I thought. Man, thanks for taking care of your servant. And he's mad. He's ticked off at God. I don't know where you get your thoughts about grief in particular, but there's a strain of counseling in grief is that, you know, there's this point in the grieving process when you need to be mad at God. That is a very, very bad and dangerous counsel. You never, ever, 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 ever have the right to be mad at God. His way is perfect. All his ways are judgment. In fact, remember when those two young men were killed, Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu? What did God say? Don't you weep. I've done the right thing. I want you to be an example to these people and showcase that everything I do is exactly right. What a hard and arduous task for Aaron. But Samson, whose life is about himself, and it would fit that we have this kind of a counsel coming into our culture at this day and age. You know, it's all about you. And when you hurt, you got a right to feel mad at God. No, you don't. No, you don't. But Samson does, because all of Samson's life is all about Samson. So we come to chapter 16. Last chapter in the story. In fact, end of chapter 15, we find out that he judged Israel in the days of Philistine for 20 years. It just kind of says, okay, so this is the pattern now. 20 years. This is his philosophy of life and ministry. I have a right to what's mine. I'll get back when I'm wrong. I like to sing about me, and if God doesn't treat me right, I'm going to let him know. And that's the guy who's judging Israel for 20 years. We pick up the story in chapter 16. And ironically, we have new places, new people, but old patterns. Verse 1. Samson went down to, doesn't matter the name of the town, this time it's Gaza. And there he saw, it's like chapter 14, verse 1. Second verse, same as the first. And he likes what he sees, but this time he sees a prostitute, and he goes into her. This probably happened sometime during the 20 years of judging Israel. We're given just this little snippet, three verses in all. But what the text is getting at is, for 20 years, life is still about Samson. It's not really about God. It's going to give us this snippet in the middle of his 20 years, and then it's going to give us Delilah at the end. And it's going to say, you know what? This story at the end is no different than the beginning of his life, or the middle of the life, or the end of his life. This is who this man was over the long haul. New places, new people, old patterns. First, it's this prostitute in Gaza. Verse 4, it's a woman in the Valley of Sorek whose name is Delilah. The Valley of Sorek is the Valley of the Choice Vine. Again, a place known for its vineyards, therefore known for its wine. Okay. Her name was Delilah. There's one of two meanings. Either it means she who makes weak, thereby reducing his strength, or she who is of the night, which stands in contrast to our little son, the little one who brings glory. The reducer of his strength, the reducer of his light, the reducer of his glory. Now there's new people, there's new problems, but there's the same old solution. For Samson, it's supernatural enablement. And so, in verse 3, what does he do to get out of his problem? He goes out and he just like rips the gates off the city wall. These gates are probably 3 times as tall as a man, maybe 20 feet high. He decides, you know what? These are in my way. So he takes up not just the gates, but he pulls up the posts and the bars, and he hefts them on his shoulder all the way to Hebron. Oh, yeah, okay, whatever. Uphill, 37 miles. The city gates. How could he do that? God. I mean, that's the only answer. This isn't like Mr. Universe competition. This is God giving him supernatural strength. Carries them 37 miles. Then there's Delilah. She starts binding him with all these, part of it is sinews. It's like hides that have been watered, and they're shrinking tight around him. And he just, it says in verse 9, he snapped these bowstrings as though they were flax that touches the fire. In verse 12, he snaps the ropes off his arms like they were thread. In verse 4, he pulls away the pin and pulls away the entire loom and decides to just get rid of this whole thing. Oh man, there's something in my hair. It's gone. Same old trick, same old solution. New people, new problems, but you know what? God's on my side. God gives me strength. I'll get out of this again. Now, there's old patterns. There's old solution. There's a new status. Verse 17, you're familiar with the story. Finally, he tells Delilah all his heart. He says, you know what, Delilah? I'm a Nazarite. That is, I'm one who's dedicated to God. If you cut my hair, I will no longer be holy. I will be common. I will be like any other man. We've talked a lot about this in the book of Leviticus. The distinction between what is holy and what is common. He says, you know what? I've been a holy man. But if you take this away, I'll be an unholy man once again. So his new status, verse 20, he did not know that the Lord had what? Left him. God's been with him up to this point. Why? God knows. It's not because of his performance, but it's by God's grace. But at this point, God leaves him. So in the middle of this new status, there's new mercy that God shows and restores him to his old mission. They gouge out his eyes. They bound him in shackles. They make him grind in the mill in a prison. They bring him out, verse 23, 24, and they say, our God is so good, so strong and so mighty. There's nothing our God cannot do. See, he gave us Samson. He becomes the brunt of their jokes, the butt of their jokes, the brunt of their jokes. He becomes their entertainment for the afternoon. But verse 22 says this, but the hair of his head began to grow back again. The hair of his head began to grow back again. That is, God's not done with this man and his mission. Come down to verse 30. We know the story. He leans on the two posts. He pushes them out. It says in verse 30, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bowed with all his strength, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those that he killed during his life. He accomplishes his mission from cradle to grave. But when it's all said and done, he dies alone. He dies loveless. And he dies childless. It's a pretty sad story. From such a promising beginning. We're not quite done with the story. The book of Hebrews picks up and says, you know what? Ultimately, Samson is numbered among the faithful. What? As we work through this story, the book of Hebrews says, what more shall I say? Time would fail to tell me of Gideon, Barak, of Samson. It lists him by name in the hall of faith, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong in their weakness. You take your pick. Samson fills many of those. He's counted among the faithful. He plays a significant, even if a lonely, role in God's program. He does possess a personal relationship with God. He does call out, even if it's just mad at God. And later on, when he's at the end of himself, he acknowledges, God, it's always been you, hasn't it? It's never really been me. Would you give me my strength one last time? And then, when it's all said and done, he dies possessing the right friend and the proper enemies. That's not a bad place to die. With God as your friend and God's enemies as your enemies. So when it's all said and done, the book of Hebrews says, you know what? Don't be like this. But be like this. Desire to play a key role in God's program. Live a life that God can use. Develop a personal relationship with God. Die with the right friends and the right enemies. Both are important. Be numbered among the faithful. So what does this mean for us? Very, very quickly, six things. Number one is this. Every mother sees her child as a hero. A blessing from God to be a blessing to others. Don't you, Mom? We've got five, okay? Every one of our five kids is my wife's hero. She sees them as God's special blessing. I do too, by the way, okay? God's special blessing for God's special purpose. That's how every mom sees their child. Every mother is hurt when her hero abdicates his manner of holiness by despising what's holy, and abandons his mission by, rather than serving others, using others. Because you know what? In the heart of every hero, they're deeply flawed. To use God, because they're so debilitated in accomplishing their purpose, because their focus is on themselves. And that's why moms and dads, by the way, but have to spend a lot of time training a young child to say, listen, the world doesn't revolve around you. The world doesn't revolve around you. There's a very simple phrase, in fact, it's a word that could have been used back in chapter 14 when Samson says, get her for me. Mom, dad could have said what? No. Because Samson, the world doesn't revolve around you. These are three important lessons. Every little hero is deeply flawed with a selfishness that will debilitate us. It'll get us off mission. It will get us off our manner of living. Fourth, we see that every mother does have a big H hero who's God himself, who is always working even when it can't be seen. One of the things that happens back in chapter 14, He says, go get her for me. And they say, well, can't you pick a different one? And then there's a little, like almost in parentheses, they did not know that it was from God, that God was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. God is going to use Samson's sinful choices to bring glory to himself. Did God want Samson to make sinful choices? No, 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 no. But does God use Samson's sinful choices? Absolutely, he does. Every mother has a hero who's God himself. You might be here today and your little hero is living exactly the way you'd love to see him living, her living, walking with God. But you might have a little hero who's a little full of themselves. They're giving you pretty big indigestion as a mother. If that's the case, mom, be encouraged this morning. Here's an ugly life. But God was at work in the midst of this life. Little hero, every hero needs a hero because the world's not about you. The story's not about you. We need Jesus Christ, the one who is anointed, who by his grace and by his spirit fits us to play our role in the story. Samson never plays his role in this story by himself. It always says, and the Spirit of God came upon him and boom, 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 boom. And the Spirit of God moved him to boom, 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 boom. You know what? The only way, young man, young lady, that we can accomplish what God wants us to do and honor him and honor our parents is when we make Jesus Christ our hero, not ourselves. And we take his Spirit from him so that we can do the work that he calls us to do. Finally, if every hero would carefully seek to honor God faithfully in discharging his duties, no mother's heart need ever be broken. You might be a mom here today. Be encouraged, mom, that you have a huge role. Chapter 13 is filled with the faithfulness of Manoah and his unnamed wife in charting the course for this little hero, in giving a perspective of this is God, this is who you belong to, this is why we do what we do. Mom, don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. You might be here as a mom who's got a little hero who's walking away. Don't give up. Pray. Talk to God. Ask him to reveal what he's doing behind the scenes. Ask that he wouldn't stop to the day your son or daughter is taken from the face of this earth. Because God's not done. God's not done. You might be a young man, a young lady. You might be in your mid-life. However you got here by a mom. At whatever stage you're at in life, you got here by a mom. And the text never says, honor your mother until... That's an open-ended command. Honor your mother. Honor your mother. Don't break your mother's heart. Book of Proverbs says, you know what? A man who walks away from God is the heaviness of his mother. Erica just gave birth to two little babies. At the end, I asked John, how's she doing, John? Uncomfortable. He's like, no big deal. Yeah, she's uncomfortable. No sweat off John's nose. Okay. But Erica's uncomfortable. The Bible says, you know what? When you walk in a direction that's unworthy of your God and unworthy of your mother, you're the heaviness of your mother. You're weighing her down even though you're outside her womb. Don't do that. Mother's Day, honor your mother. It's always, not a single day. And it's in the choices, not the words we say. So you're going to give your mom today Mother's Day card. I love you, Mom. Love you, Mom. Do you? Or do you just love you? Let's pray.